Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, David Clark, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And for today's show, we're going to be talking about self-discovery. So please feel free to participate or to just listen. So let me welcome my co-host, Kat Edwards. Kat, how are you today?
Hello, I'm fantastic, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, too. Thanks for asking. Well, this is an interesting topic that I pulled out of the hat. It's been a big part of my journey. How about yourself?
I think it is the journey.
Journey
inward to self-discovery. When you begin to get to that place, you begin to release yourself from all the pain.
It feels like the big journey. I agree with that. However, I've come to see some people that don't really go on that journey. They remain very unaware and disconnected from themselves. And, I mean, it can be a fun journey, but it takes a lot of work, too. You know? And it takes a lot of commitment to get to know oneself.
Yeah, it does. And also to have self-discipline, because that goes hand in hand with it.
Yeah. I agree. When were you aware you were on this journey?
That's a good question. You're asking me good questions now. Let me think about that. I've always been introspective and a deep thinker. So that's like when the chicken and which one first, the chicken and the egg, because I've always been deep thinking. Consciously I am going through a self-discovery. Probably started around age 15, I'd say. But I was having a lot of paranormal experiences all my life, so I was still trying to understand myself. Probably 15 was when I started to see that other people had something similar happen to them and I could reach out and start to learn from others. Because I think part of the journey inward is to learn from the mistakes and the wisdom of others to help guide you on your path. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, it certainly does. You can avoid a lot of pain that way if you learn from other people. And it's interesting, you said 15. I was, you know, as I asked the question, I was trying to figure that out for myself. And excuse me, adolescence seems to be a time of trying to figure things out. And so that makes sense. And I think that's about when it started for me, too, sometime after 13. And I can relate to being very introspective. I was very much an introvert and lived inside myself to a large degree. And I've been peeling back the layers of the onion for a long time, and it really, really started to reveal itself around the time that I got into recovery from alcoholism, because that's one of the steps in the 12-step program, is to make a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself. And I didn't really like the sound of that because the focus seemed to be on identifying character defects. And I think it's important to focus on qualities rather than defects. I mean, yes, it is good to know what your shortcomings are and where there's room for improvement. But I believe that an affirmative path is a much more positive way to work through life. What do you think?
Can you explain what taking a moral inventory of yourself is all about and why you came to that conclusion?
Okay. I mean, for instance, I could have considered some of my actions and some of my negative qualities as being somewhat arrogant and feeling self-important, when really I was kind of self-deprecating and I would beat myself up a lot. And the potential, which I'm realizing, is that I'm very selfless, that I'm, what's the word that I'm searching for? I'm a giving person. I'm a humble person. That's the word I'm searching for. That's the opposite of arrogance. So that's one example. I mean, there can be things like procrastination or the opposite of that. I mean, there's a whole list of qualities or negative qualities that we can take a look at. And so that's really what the gist of that step was about. And, you know, when you look at moral inventory, I think that just relates to what one's own character is about. The definition of self-discovery that I have here is the process of acquiring insight into one's own character. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
It does, in that the moral inventory that you took was starting to unpack yourself and look at yourself with, you know, warts and all, with no fear of actually what you're going to see. Because I think that part of the whole thing is that there's going to be a lot of fear. You're going to have to face up and square away with the dark side of who you are and with some of the things that you've done. And that's across the board with me, you, everybody. There's not a person alive who doesn't have to face themselves and square away with what they've done.
You know, but there's interesting... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, the answer to who you are isn't in the behavior that you display or the actions that you took. They are the things that have revealed problems in your character, but they are not who you are. So go on, David, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to give an acronym for fear that I've heard that I really like, and that you were talking about recovering your true self. And so there's an acronym that's for fear that's face everything and recover. And I don't know. I've heard some other acronyms too, but that meant something to me, because we have at the core of ourselves our true self, and the whole process of self-discovery is getting more in touch with that. And whether or not we ever realize that, I think most people fall far short of that. But you can start by visualizing your ideal self, and that probably is your true self, but there's a long road and a long journey to get toward that point. What do you think?
No, it absolutely is. But it's an important one because you identify and embrace your authentic self. And you begin, hopefully, to start to like yourself despite everything that you may have done or experienced in the past that may have been negative. You begin to see this goodness in yourself, which was always there. And then that's the place to grow. That's the place to focus on. That's the aspect of you that's limitless. And it isn't so much that it needs to grow, but rather you need to grow in the presence of it. So to you, it might look like a tiny star out in the solar system, but to the limitless good self, you, the lower self, is the opposite, is the tiny star in the solar system, and it is the limitless, massive star that whose light reaches to every corner of the solar system and around again. So how do you get to that point where you're in that unlimited space? And that's the space where you come to that journey and you've found yourself, and now the true journey begins. I think you need to know your dreams. That's part of it. Set goals, become more passionate. And then start to define who you are with recognizing your values and withdrawing from toxicity so that you don't have any external influences that take you away from the focus of the good and unlimited part of yourself. So, you know, that can be hard because you may have to walk away from food, clothing, shelter, people, things that you like to do that are not necessarily good for you. But the desire to be in that unlimited place has to be greater than the desire for the limited place. So therefore your desires begin to shape your future. So it becomes a circle, whereas you may have been in a vicious circle. When you break that, you become more and more focused on enriching your life, and the circle becomes in more and more enrichment, and more enrichment becomes of you. And then what happens is that then has a ripple effect, and the people who love and care about you begin to feel released as well. So it's because you're more than that. You're more than just your own journey. You're part of the greater journey, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you were talking about friends and family, I was thinking about, I was previously thinking about tools for self-exploration. And I think a big one comes from those people that know us best, because we don't always see the things or qualities or defects, if you will, that we possess that other people may see. And so I think it's a good idea when you're trying to get to know yourself to reach out to other people and not be afraid and ask them what it is they see in you. What are the qualities they see? What are the shortcomings? And some people will be quick to point those out anyway, but that's another story. You know, some of the other tools that I remembered when I was researching the topic were keeping a journal. I kept a journal for about 20 years, and I wish that I'd kept it up, because I would write about whatever was on my mind for that day, and I wouldn't have any particular agenda with where I went with it. I would just write thoughts and feelings. And that was a good way to kind of get in touch, because I was very disconnected with from my feelings as a child. I was told I should and shouldn't feel certain ways. And that was confusing to me. And it took me away from really understanding myself and what made me tick and how I perceived the world that I was going through. I think it's important. I love what you were saying about exploring passions. I think that's a really important tool in getting in touch with yourself. And a lot of people just don't have a clue. And we all have passions. I mean, we may think in terms of what we do for work, but there are other things that we probably like even more. And you talked about identifying what you value about yourself. You could look at what you value about others and draw comparisons between that. You can learn new things. And so those are some of the things that you can do to begin the self-exploration process. Are there any other things that you can think of, Kat?
Yes. I think there are many, many tools out there to help you to understand this lifetime and why you are at where you're at as far as lessons go and personal discovery. So, there's modern contemporary tools like the Myers-Briggs personality test, and there's more ancient tools like numerology and astrology. But these tools are here to help you to understand who you are. It's the ultimate question, who am I? And people can get really focused on one aspect of who they are, and then they've settled on that, and then that becomes their entire focus. And because that becomes their entire focus, they then regain limitation. And it might be, I am a horse trainer, that is who I am, and their entire focus is just on being a horse trainer, but they're also a sibling, an aunt, a co-worker, a friend to the horse, multiple different aspects of who they are depending on who they're looking at. Which face. It's like a, Game of Thrones, a many-faced god. You put on many, many faces throughout your day, and each face, if you are walking your path, is genuinely who you are. And so everyone around you feels safe with you because you are being genuine. Where I see that there is a problem in the self-discovery process is that aspect of this is one thing that I'm only focusing on, and I'm going to jump up and down and force everybody to look at it and change their life to suit it. And I'm offended if you don't. That controlling aspect that some people on the planet are going through, and I'm not going to bring up which part of that, is limiting. In the discovery of who you are, it's like diving into a beautiful, cool water on a hot day. Dive into every aspect of who you are. Don't make one aspect the most dominant and then to the pain of all others. Make sure that you equally love every aspect of who you are. That way you are unlimited. It doesn't matter if your journey has some confusion in it. Confusion allows you to start to focus on the good and find your way out of the confusion into a conclusion of who you are. So if you were confused about your gender identity, for example, then embrace the confusion rather than reject it, because it only causes you more suffering in your own emotional response. By embracing it, you no longer have that emotional response, and take personal responsibility for it. Don't look to others to not offend you over your own confusion. Instead, take personal responsibility for it and dive into the pool that is that until you come to a conclusion of where you feel you're at. But don't make that the entire focus or it becomes limited. Continue with your hobbies and interests. Dive into other pools that are cooling and entertaining and interesting. You are a multifaceted, amazing individual. So I think that as we begin to go deeper into self-discovery, we realize what we're actually going into is the great depth of the unlimited self. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. And I liked what you were saying about loving all aspects of yourself and how we're multifaceted. And I just wanted to say, I think it's really important. We've talked about self-love in the past, and I think it's really important not to judge yourself around anything. You know, when you start to look at things as good and bad, you're judging. And granted, there are things that are more positive and more negative. And I think the important thing to realize is that we all have the potential to grow in positive directions. And this has been my journey, and I think it's everybody's journey. I've struggled a lot in my past, and the struggle apparently was part of the path I was supposed to be on, but I don't think it's really necessary. It gets into that suffering thing that you were talking about. That certainly is an option, and we are going to suffer at points because we are human. But we can reduce that by being kind to ourselves, being gentle with ourselves, loving ourselves. View it as a process, and there's no hurry. Life is going to sort things out for you as you go along, or you're going to sort things out as you go along. I think it's so important not to judge.
I agree. And it can be really, really hard because we can be our own harshest critic. I certainly am towards myself many times. Other people have pulled me up and told me not to be so hard on myself. You get to that place because, you know, if you don't speak for me, I know I'm a perfectionist and I can really beat myself up for not being perfect in a particular thing. And I'll learn about something and then I'll get a full sort of image of it from going down that path, and I'll also fumble while I'm learning to get the practical skills. But if I don't end up achieving what I wanted to achieve out of the process, I can find myself getting pretty grumpy with myself, and yet the whole aspect of it, for the whole reason for doing it in the first place, was to discover some part of who I am. So I'm guilty of that, and that is just part of the journey. I need to release that self-judgment so that I can actually feel more unlimited than I ever have before. And it's I think it's like a peeling an onion. It's the old analogy. you just sort of peel the onion, and as you go, the tears will shed. But you know that onion's going to taste so good in the soup, so you may as well just keep peeling it. You'll get the reward in the end.
Right, right. Well, I mean, there are a lot of rewards that can happen from self-discovery. I mean, you know, we've talked about some of the things that don't feel good, like fear and confusion, doubt, those kind of things. But, you know, we can find happiness and clarity and fulfillment. And, you know, for some, they can achieve enlightenment. And so that's wonderful. And there are certainly are benefits to self-discovery and the personal growth that we can experience as a result of it. It's a very healing thing. I know that as I began the journey of recovery from addiction, there was a lot of hurt that I was masking through addictions that I sought to soothe myself with. And as I started to shed them through the process of self-discovery, if you will, I began to heal. And I also began to feel more connected to other people. I'd led kind of an isolated existence. And I was very drawn into myself and very judgmental. As Kat was saying, I too was a perfectionist, and I would beat myself up when I fell short. And I came to see that I was connected to other people, that I was perfect even given my imperfections. I'm a perfect child of God, and I'm not alone. I never have been alone, even though I felt that way. And so I've learned to experience more confidence in who I am, and have redefined my reality into something that is beautiful and something that that is aiming towards happiness more and more. I can't say that I'm there all the time. No, I'm not. And there are things that are going to happen in life, irregardless of where I'm at on my own self-discovery process. There are things that are going to make me feel sad. There are things that are going to make me feel angry. But that's part of being human.
It certainly is, David. That you can't get away from. But you have to remember that you are only human. You know, it is part of being human, but at some point we can forget that we're only human, and I think it's because we know that there's this unbelievable, unlimited self that is there, but we're frustrated because we're not at that point. Yet when we go to bed at night and close our eyes, we can be unlimited. So how do you make yourself unlimited in a 3D world? And that's part of that discovery, is you've got to dive into self-love. And I think you just mentioned self-love there, and it is the answer. Only when you start to look back at yourself and at the things that you know are who you are will you start to have a more settled and more comfortable life. Only then. And until then, if you're after a quick fix or a fast answer, instant gratification, or you don't care of the consequences, you just want that thing now, you are in a forgetting space. And there are a lot of things that can cause you to forget. This consumerism that drives media can really, if you focus on that, you can find yourself in a place where you've forgotten who you are because you've gotten swept up in the psychosis that they're trying to actually cause you to have, so that you'll buy their products and think the way that they think, so you'll continue to be their consumer. So you need to remain steadfast in the things that you like and put them at a priority. One of the things that I do now, I just don't look at the television anymore. If there's something that's really, really important in society for me to know about, it'll filter through to me. I don't need to see the television and the news anymore, so we don't have it on at night. When we come home, we connect, we talk, we laugh, we play, we fight, we work on ourselves with each other. We can be ourselves around each other, and so we can help each other to grow. When we start to put distractions into that process that tell us who we are instead of our own self telling us who we are, this is where we begin to become very lost. And if we're not careful, it can start at a young age. So we have to have no interference in the journey of self-discovery. Once you really get on that path, the desire for interference is no longer there. You may have to put your foot down and say no more, but at the same time, as you go along, you become more apathetic towards the interference anyway. So it all becomes building blocks to that new personality structure, which is the unlimited self and the amazing things that change in your life for the better.
You know, earlier you were talking about frustration that can come as a part of the process, and it made me think how important it is to practice patience. And that's a quality that I have been striving for. I've been a rather impatient person in my past, and a lot of that has come out of being harsh and judgmental, and that's caused me to experience frustration. And I don't need to do that. I really don't. Nobody does. And yet we all tend to do that from time to time. And I liked what you were saying about television. I remember years ago, a friend of mine who was in recovery told me she didn't watch the news. And I thought that was astounding. How could somebody not want to be in touch with what's going on in the world? And as you say, and this is what I've discovered for myself, because I've gotten away from watching the news unless there's something really earth-shattering that happens and I want to tune in and find out more for myself, it does filter down, and I do hear about it, and I don't need to be fed a negative diet of things that are going wrong in the world, because that's usually what the news focuses on. If it was more positive, I think I would tend to watch it, and that's why I like programs on public broadcasting system. They're much more uplifting and positive, and their news reporting is a little bit more balanced as well. So that's something that people might want to consider, because garbage in, garbage out. And what we feed ourselves becomes a part of our reality. And so I think it's important to consider what you feed yourself with.
Absolutely. And it's one of the very first lessons that is taught to someone who starts the journey is what are you putting into your mind? Watch it. Watch what you're putting into your mind. You don't want to add activity in there, because then you have to deal with that. It becomes a little trauma. And, you know, there could be an argument, oh, we need to have a little bit of trauma because it builds resilience. But when we're resilient enough, thanks, we've been beat up by life enough, we don't need to add insult to injury by being fed constant negative things about the outside world, how to think and what to do, what to wear and how to be in accordance with some other person who really, in the end, has no actual effect on who we are if we switch that TV off. It only matters to you if you get caught up in what they want you to think. And there's usually an agenda behind that. You know, it's an agenda of selling a product or controlling you so that you'll do a certain thing or getting a message across. Whatever the agenda is, it's not an agenda of who you really are, and it's also not an agenda of the person who's putting it out there of who they really are. Because the truth is that you're an unlimited good. You're a conscious being, and you are consciousness, and your consciousness is unlimited, and it is good. In the limiting of the consciousness, this is when we begin to start to see the corruption of the mind. So the mind cannot be corrupted if it's unlimited. That is because it sees that it is all things and all things are it. And it no longer feels like it has to worry to push anything in a certain direction because it sees that all things are it and it is all things. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. I was a little distracted. I had a call coming in that I was ignoring, but of course, you know, with the caller ID these days, you try to figure out who's calling. And so I was doing that and lost track for a moment. There was something I was thinking about, and maybe it will come to me. Oh, I know, perception. I had an example of something where I was judging myself just today, and I had to come to a new awareness around something. And the situation was this. I had somebody call me up from my church and ask me if I'd be willing to speak about stewardship, which generally refers to raising money for the church. And I'm not a tither. I give very little to the church other than of my talent. I give very little treasure. I just don't have the money for that, and I felt like, I initially started to beat myself up a little bit over what I perceived to be a shortcoming, and then I thought some more, and I thought, well, you know, I give in a lot of ways to this world, and it's not about giving to the church, it's about giving to life. And then I thought about what the church meant to me and that I could talk about that instead of the money thing, that I could talk about how this was a church where I was baptized and my parents were raised and married and met in the choir. And I've got this long history, even though I've only been a member for a few years. And so I thought I'd talk about those positive things. And that made me feel more of a sense of value around myself and my life experience connected to this one aspect of my life. And so I let go of this thought that I should be giving more or I should not stand up to talk about stewardship because it has a broader meaning than just money. And people can give in ways that don't involve money if they don't have it. So that was just a new discovery I made about myself today. And, you know, we make discoveries about ourselves every day, and a lot of times they just go unrecorded, if you will. I mean, we aren't even aware that we're doing that. And that's one of the benefits of journaling or sitting down and at the end of the day and looking at the things that we're grateful for. Because I think one of the biggest gifts that we can give ourselves is the process of peeling back the layers of the onion and getting more in touch with ourselves. What do you think about that?
Yeah, we're really coming full circle here. But I think we've mentioned this in the past, David, about the hero's journey, haven't we? Because it's so important to recognize that when you're going on a pathway of self-love and of self-discovery, you are actually going on the hero's journey. And the hero's journey, for those who don't know, is the journey of self-discovery that you often see a hero in a movie or a novel take. So there's a call to action, and the hero feels the need to go, and then they have the departure and the initiation. I'm just trying to look up the stages of the hero's journey because it's quite a good one to think about as you're going on that pathway of self-discovery. So the hero is in their natural environment. And then there's a call to action. And there's a refusal of the call. So the hero doesn't think that they can do it. And then they meet a mentor, and the mentor helps them to cross the threshold. And then they go through a trial and their first failure. And then they meet allies and enemies, and they have growth in their new skills and a first success. And then there's a grand trial, a revelation and an insight. And there's a discarding of the old self as they have now grown out of that skin, like a serpent sheds a skin. They've grown out of the old skin and they've become accepting of the new role. And then they continue forward into the road back home. They're ready now to go home as a new reinvigorated person. And they step up. In order to get home, they have to step up to the final challenge. And that might cause them to have great self-sacrifice, but there is always some level of success. And then there's a restoring of order. And finally, taking new place in the old world. So this is the hero's journey. And as you go on the path of self-discovery, you can take something very similar on. And you can imagine, I think I mentioned in the past about the two different homeless guys that ended up at college and changed their lives around. If I go with the guy off the top of my head who lives in northern New South Wales near a town called Lismore and Byron Bay, that fellow had a very difficult life growing up in a dysfunctional family, and he ended up losing everything and going and living in the mountains as a hermit, growing pot and brewing his own whiskey and beer to make money. And he was scrawny and malnourished and unable to look after himself when he finally came down from the mountain and got medical help. But they just set him back out into the wild once they fixed him up. And he decided to stay around and to get work. So he had the call to action. It was now, no, don't go back up the mountain. You need to change your life. So he decided to do something. And then he realized he couldn't get work because he had no experience because he'd lived in a mountain for so long. So there was a refusal of the call. But then he met somebody who talked to him about getting an education, and that's the mentor. And so he crossed the threshold into going in back to school, and he got his year 10 certificate, and then he went on to get his year 12 and SATs, and then he was able to enter the university system. So he crossed the threshold, he went through the trials, met the enemies and allies, he grew in his new skills, and he got his first taste of success with passing the year 10 and then passing the year 12 and the grand trial and revelation and insight that went with that. And then you could see that this guy went through multiple layers of the hero's journey until he finally became a PhD and a professor. He got a job in the university system assisting as a professor. And that was his very first job. And then he himself became a professor. And it was through education that he discovered who he was. But it was more than that. It was turning his back on a life that was self-deprecating and lacking of meaning. And he began to seek a life filled with meaning. Because I think in the end, part of the unlimited self is that it's, the self is connected to all things and all things are connected to the self. So the unlimited self begins to recognize that it cannot be unlimited unless it is reaching out and affecting the rest in a positive way.
Let me interrupt you for a minute, Kat. We do have a caller on the line. I don't know if they have any questions or comments, but I would like to give this person an opportunity to at least say hello. And if you don't want to talk, that's fine too, but I'm coming to area code 201. And you're live. What is your first name, please?
Hi. My first name is Jacqueline.
Hi, Jacqueline. Is there anything you want to say?
I know that from what I pick up from the conversation, I know that the journey itself is very frustrating. And oftentimes you second guess your decisions, or you question yourself. So the journey itself is one, I guess, to gather or to at least exercise your faith, and also to show gratitude when you realize that your faith is working out and that things are working for your good. I've been on a journey now for 10 years. And it's been one of the most difficult things for my life to have to manage and at the same time cope with, you know, everyday trials and things. And the biggest hurdle for me has been to remain confident, because it's always one thing after another. Like, what I know now, and I don't even know if it really was the hero's journey, because unless that's one of the same as the wounded healer, are you able to distinguish the two? Because sometimes when I hear the descriptions, to me they sound one of the same. One is wounded while you're going through this journey, and if you survive it somehow, you become a hero. And I don't think that's what I was really setting out to do, because it's, like, really painful. I mean, sometimes within this whole thing, I felt like I just wanted to just die, you know. So if you could just elaborate or distinguish the difference between the wounded healer versus the hero's journey, I would appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for commenting and raising that question, and I have a response, and I'm sure Kat does too. I just wanted to briefly say that in my life, I was a wounded healer. I was a social worker that counseled people.
Wait, I'm a teacher. And I work with
artists. Are you? Okay.
Very complex, very draining, but at the same time, I started to have my own family issues and dysfunctions. And my mother passed away. And that's been the thing that's really been very taxing on me emotionally and spiritually.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, I guess the point I was trying to make was, I don't know if you tuned, I don't know at what point you tuned in, but I also suffered from multiple addictions. And at the time I was still active in those addictions, I was working with people and attempting to help them even overcome their own addictions. And so I was very wounded, but I learned from the clients that I worked with, because the ones that had my issues were the ones that were teaching me what I needed healing within myself. And so the hero's journey for me was recognizing that and waking up to the fact that I had an obligation to myself and to my clients to begin the healing. And so for me, that was my hero's journey. And I don't know, Kat, what you might want to say.
I don't profess to be an expert on the wounded healer. I'm sure there's far more interesting and knowledgeable people than me out there on the subject. But it seems to me that the wounded healer gets to a place where they are so filled with sadness because they've had so much pain that they are able to have the highest level of compassion for others. And when they turn their face and look at into the sun, their tears are dried, but their hurts become a shield. And it's like Archangel Michael bringing up the sword and the shield. So they no longer become the victim, but rather the protector and the champion and the powerful one. It emboldens them and empowers them. But in their heart, it's a heart of sadness, because the most compassionate heart knows all wounds, knows all pain, and feels extremely deeply and is extremely touched by anything that has a moment of opening of their heart. And it can be a very liberating thing to allow yourself to be that wounded healer, from what I can read. I mean, my own experience of compassion. And, you know, I'm just like everyone else. I've been wounded physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. I know that hiding my wounds can protect me. But how to put my woundedness to the service of others, this is how I can do something with it. So it no longer becomes my precious pain that I must protect at all costs and feel victimized by. It now becomes my empowerment and my reason to push forward, because it now gives meaning. So that to me is the path of the wounded healer. And it is also to connect it with the path of self-discovery. It is in the fact that you realize that your wounds do not limit you, but rather they allow you to become unlimited, because you stop feeling like they are a precious flesh wound, and you begin to realize that they have given you greater things, like resilience, like knowledge, like a sense of what you want and don't want. And they allow you to have these deeper answers. And then they allow you to stand up and see who else is struggling under the weight of these wounds and how to pull them up and out of it as well. So it becomes an invigorating thing. And then at that point there, you start to have satisfaction. You start to have a sense of what I went through was not for nothing. It was stuck for something, and it makes me more empowered by experiencing that something that my wounds can give me. It doesn't take them away, you know, and if you were to talk about them, you would more likely go into crying again, but it gives you that sense of empowerment. And that's where you discover more of who you are. And the id, which is that unknown part of who you are, is revealed in the extreme. Does that make sense?
One final comment I wanted to make was that I've noticed that people that have experienced deep wounds in their past, in their childhood and early adult years, are often drawn to the helping professions. And ultimately, and hopefully, many of them do become healed, wounded healers.
Right.
But I just think that that's a very interesting insight that I've had along the way. We do have one more caller that just tuned in, and I'm just going to acknowledge them by area code. We don't really have time to go to the line. Area code 860, I don't know how much of the show that you've been able to listen to, but I thank you for joining us today. And we are coming toward the end of the hour. We usually do a meditation, but we're going to skip that today. And I would invite people that are listening to the show to please visit our Facebook page, and maybe Kat could tell you a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have a Facebook page called The Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards. We'd love it if you come along and click like. And we post our radio shows each week up on the page. So you can go back and listen to this podcast or past podcasts. And if you want to suggest a topic, make sure that you send us a suggestion just on the messenger for the Facebook page is good enough. And please tell your friends, because the reason we're broadcasting is so that we can share the love with you and with anyone who wants to tune in and have a discussion. You can also listen to us on Blog Talk Radio at David Clark. It's author David Clark, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Blog Talk Radio. And you can discover David's many other radio shows on that show, that channel. He has a Friday night show in the U.S., Friday night, called Different Strokes for Different Folks, where he interviews many interesting spiritual people from around the world. And if you can tune in there, and I think you can get a free reading if he's got a reader on there. So it's worth checking that out. And tuning to us every Monday night is 8. No, it's not. It's, I can't remember off the top of my head.
4 p.m. in the 4 p.m. in the States, in the Eastern zone. And I would
like
to reiterate that we want to talk about what is important to you. So if you would please consider sending us a topic for discussion, that would be more meaningful than us generating them ourselves, because then we'll speak to the issues that you want to hear.
Yes, absolutely.
So
I was going to say, just to tune in to us every week, 6 a.m. Tuesday for Aussie Eastern Standard Time, Brisbane. I'm not in daylight savings, and 4 p.m. in North American Eastern. Are you in standard time now? Have you clicked over, or are you still in daylight savings time?
Not until the beginning of November.
Still in daylight savings. 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time in North America on a Monday. And thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Yes, thank you, Jacqueline, for contributing, and thank you, Eric, Code 860, for tuning in. And we wish you well, and have a good week.
Goodbye.